When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey out there, rock and rollers. Welcome to the 152nd edition of the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast, brought to you by me, your host, Mac B. the Wolf. And we will be joined, as always, by my partner in crime, Gary Action Jackson from the East Coast of the United States of America. We thank you for tuning in here lately. Our 150th was great. Got to talk to Steve Kilby of the Church while they're on their North American Hypnogogue tour. And on the 151st episode, we got to listen to Rush's third live album, A Show of Hands, from their controversial, well, maybe not controversial, but divisive 80s stage. And you know, every time that we have an anniversary show, which are first, second, or will soon be third year anniversary since a show was released, we'll pub that out on social media. And recently, we had the two-year anniversary of when we reviewed Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, which had just turned 50 at that time. Really kind of an amazing album. And it was a bit of a departure for us because it's more of an R&B album, right? It's not really something that we usually do. I just thought because of its cultural significance and the fact that it was having a big milestone, it would make for a great show. And it did. Jackson and I really got to explore some music we didn't know that well other than the big hits. And really think about the social consequences of everything that was happening then and happening now. So we thought, all right, we don't always have to do huge rock albums, even though that's what we know and love. We can mix it up a little bit, take our life experience and what certain albums meant to us. Well, we were looking for a theme for a Halloween kind of show, and without some of the obvious ones, I thought, you know what? What about Thriller? Thriller is a scary movie, amazing video, huge seller, the biggest selling album of all time, and it hit us at a time in our lives when we were just starting to get into music. Thriller was, in fact, the first cassette that I ever owned, and we talk about that during the show. Jackson didn't own it because everybody else did. I mean, parents did, older siblings had it. It was all over the radio. It was all over MTV. Couldn't get away from it, so he didn't really feel the need to own it, right? But it was a huge deal with songs like Billie Jean and Beat It and Thriller, The Girl Is Mine, Human Nature, PYT. I mean, it goes on and on. Seven hit singles, seven in the top 10, seven platinum selling singles, the biggest selling album of all time. And it's going to be turning 41 right around Thanksgiving. We thought it'd be a good time to celebrate Thriller and what it really meant to us growing up in the 80s. I mean, when Michael Jackson did the moonwalk on Motown 25, it changed my life. It changed a lot of people's lives. It was must-see television. And the Thriller premiere, which was not only like a 15-minute video, but it also had a making-of video along with it. Such a big deal for MTV and for Michael Jackson, obviously, and for 10-year-old kids everywhere. And I was one of them. And I mean 10-year-old kids from ages 6 to 60. It was a big deal. Cultural phenomenon unlike anything we've really seen since. So we're going to get into Thriller Go track by track here shortly. But first, we do have a little bit of business to take care of. As usual, we like to talk about the fact that we are a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast family, a network of about 100 different shows out there. Not all rock music. There really is something in there for everyone. I encourage you to check it out at www.pantheonpodcast.com or at Pantheon Pods on social media. And you've got to do yourself a favor and go to rarevinyl.com. Guys, Rare Vinyl may be in the UK, but they ship all around the world. And they have over 250,000 items in stock. And that includes some Michael Jackson and Jackson 5 stuff. But they have everything. CDs, DVDs, albums, singles, programs, ticket stubs, point of sale items from record stores. You really can't miss. And if you use the code UGLY, U-G-L-Y, you can save 10% off your orders. Now, the holidays are coming up. Maybe you need to get something special for that special someone. Maybe you want to get yourself something special and then give it to your partner and say, hey, you know what? Wrap this up for me, honey. This is what you can get me for the holidays. Do that. I do it every year, and I always get the records that I want. But check out rarevinyl.com. Use a code UGLY. It's a one-time code, so don't just get one $10 CD you can get anywhere. Go find that rare first edition. Go find that thing from Europe that you can't get in America. Go find the thing that you wanted since you were a kid, or maybe you used to have it and now it's gone. Go find that rare item or items. Use the code UGLY. Save yourself a lot of money. Maybe get all the shipping knocked off of there. But Michael Jackson could not have been bigger during the Thriller era. Thanks to MTV. Thanks to the Pepsi ad that he did with Alfonso Ribeiro. Thanks to the fact that Paul McCartney and Mick Jagger did songs with him at some point during this time. He could not have been bigger. Biggest thing in the whole world. So that's what this one's all about. Episode 152, folks. We're doing Michael Jackson's Thriller. Right here on The Wolf. So as we're approaching Halloween here, Jackson, and the 41st anniversary of the release of Thriller, obviously it was a game changer album for the industry and for people our age. Coming out, you know, late 82, dominated the charts in 83 and 84. But I'd kind of forgotten, I hadn't forgotten the cultural impact, but I'd kind of forgotten just how big it really was. How big was it to you growing up?
So I knew you were going to ask me that question. And in thinking about that, I never had this record and I've never listened to this record purposely.
You've never listened to Thriller all the way through?
Never listened to it all the way through. However, I know other than the two songs that Baby Be Mine and The Lady in My Life, I know all of these songs like the back of my hand. So to your point, yes, it was inescapable.
Yes.
Growing up. Like it was on the radio. Everybody, I did not have a copy of it. Everybody I knew had a copy of it, from people our age up to adults.
Yeah.
People that never, they never had another record like this, like in the same genre. They had Thriller. Everybody had a copy of Thriller. You could take this record to the ends of the earth, to people who don't speak English, and show them this. Oh yeah, Michael Jackson. I know who that is.
Yes, exactly.
It's enormous. And what I didn't really realize too is that it was always around for us.
Yeah.
Right? Like you didn't really remember a time when it wasn't around. But apparently this was a huge deal for African-American artists. Mm. Like it was the first time anybody who was African-American had had this big of a record, and it didn't even faze me. It was always like, yeah, like Michael Jackson's always been around. He's always been a huge star.
Yeah.
I don't remember a time when that wasn't true.
Even before this came out, you knew him from the Jackson 5, right?
Correct.
He'd been around since before we were really understood what music was, or pop music or whatever.
Right.
ABC. Yeah, I remember that one. It was a big one. Sure. It's been on the radio a long time. Now, this was the first cassette that I ever owned. And I used to keep my cassettes in a case, and I kept them in the order in which I got them for the longest time.
Okay.
I stopped that in college because it was like I wanted to ditch some of the 80s pop cassettes that I knew I wasn't going to listen to anymore. And that included Thriller. But, I wanted to keep, like the Rush and the AC/DC and the Rolling Stones and the ones that I'd had, in that genre. But I still have it. Here it is, the cassette. Ooh. On Epic Records. It's still got the crack in the side of it there from when it got dropped in the car one day, I'm pretty sure. But you're right. I mean, old people loved it. Young people loved it. People of all races and creeds liked it. You know, I would listen to it in the car with my mother because she liked it, because everybody liked it, And seeing him on the Motown 25th anniversary doing the moonwalk totally changed the world. Totally changed the world. You say, well, Motown is, it's black music. I'm like, well, obviously it is made by black folks. And it was a real business owned, operated by Berry Gordy. But like my parents, I know your parents were more into like swing and big band stuff. My parents were all into Motown because that's what would get you dancing. That's what could get the girls to make out and stuff. Yes, my dad eventually got into the harder rock and roll in the later 60s. But it was like that in Motown. That was the soundtrack to their lives. That whole generation, really.
Right. And like you mentioned, I mean, the Jackson 5 had been around forever. And so the transition to him being a solo star, while I'm sure it didn't make the rest of the family happy, was kind of the natural progression. He kind of to get away from that and do his own thing and not be a child anymore. Yeah, that was huge. I didn't realize that Off the Wall was that big either. Like, I had heard the songs from it, but I think that's a 10 million seller also, right?
It is, but a lot of that was buoyed by the fact, by Thriller, right? I mean, like, I think it was a platinum album, but it was kind of big, like you said, like in the black community and the disco community, you know, and it got huge, you know, wind in its sails after Thriller came out. Like, I've got Off the Wall too. I haven't listened to it that much, but it was just like, once you had Thriller and you listened to that 500 times, like, what else is there? You know, I'm like, all right, well, he's got Off the Wall, and Quincy produced that one too, right? So, all right, well, I'll pick that one up. But the other thing that, it's hard to imagine now just because it's pretty commonplace now. But back then, lead singers who left their band that made them famous never really hit it that big. It was always, the lead singer could go off and do their own thing. Maybe Diana Ross had a big career after the Supremes. But for the most part, nobody went solo from a band and had any kind of real success, because the band still has the band and brand name. They still have all the tunes, and they have everybody but maybe the lead singer who left, you know. So it just didn't work really that way. And people are always skeptical. Oh, it's like, oh no, he left the band. He's not, you know, the big anymore. That's why, like, when David Lee Roth left to go solo, like, oh, that's not going to work. And Peter Cetera leaves Chicago, oh, that's not going to work. Stevie Nicks is doing thing outside of Fleetwood Mac, oh, that's not going to work. It's like, you know, it just didn't happen. And now it's pretty common that if you're in a band, you'll probably, the lead singer can go on and have a solo career if they want. It's really not that odd.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to his credit, he did surround himself with fairly talented people to launch him into a solo star.
Absolutely. I mean, the talent all over this album is crazy. And the budget was pretty off the charts. I mean, I saw the budgets, like, in 81 or 82, $750,000 budget. Well, that's like $2.3 million today. Taylor Swift doesn't have $2.3 million to make a new album.
Yeah, I think if she asked for that, they would say probably no.
Yeah.
But I mean, so was that Quincy Jones, though, right? Like, he was the muscle that allowed them to spend that much money.
Yeah, and Off the Wall was a hit. And so it's like, yeah, you know, we can make this right. We can make it killer. Just give us the budget, and CBS, Epic, Motown, whoever you want to call it. So they're all, you know, when you have a success like this, there's a lot of fathers, you know, who kind of claim, yes, well, you know, this was part of my plan all along kind of thing. All I know is that you're right. Seven singles. There's nine songs on the record, seven singles that you heard on the radio, and they all got into the top 10 in America. All of them. All of them. Now, having seven singles on any album is kind of amazing. And then if you got all of them in the top 40, that would be a record. But this one, every single got in the top 10 in America and a lot of other places around the world. And not only are we talking Thriller being the biggest selling album of all time, right? Bigger than Dark Side of the Moon, bigger than Back in Black, bigger than Eagles Volume 1, might have over 100 million sales. They don't even really know. It's right. Triple diamond in the U.S., 34 million in verified sales, United States alone. Unbelievable. But then all the singles, some of the singles are diamond. Most of the singles are platinum. Can you imagine having this multi-platinum album and then all the singles are platinum and multi-platinum? It's unbelievable. And I'm looking at the release date through 1983. It's just like boom, boom, boom. Every and in 1982, because they always do a launch, a pre-release right. single to kind of jazz everybody up. Just boom, 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 boom. You couldn't get away from Michael Jackson if you wanted to. And then by the end of 83, Thriller, the video, comes out on MTV. Oh my God, dude. Epic, huge, appointment television. And then they had the making of too, right?
Yes.
You know, because the video was longer than the song. They kind of stretched it out so Michael could do his choreographed dance move with all the zombies in his red zombie jacket. Then the making of was huge. You know, it was a movie unto itself. I don't know if we'll ever see a pop culture moment where one person really owns everything for that long.
Not like that.
For a year, yeah.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Taylor Swift. And at this point in time, while we're recording the show, she is probably the biggest pop star in the world right now. I mean, she's selling out all over the world. She's selling a ton of records, but she does not have the command of pop culture the way that Michael Jackson was. You mentioned that Thriller video. Everybody that we knew, every single person, they hyped it for what, 2 or 3 weeks. You know, it's whatever day it was going to drop. Everybody was in front of the TV. It was all anybody was talking about, from kids to adults to everybody. They were going to tune in to see this thing.
Exactly. And when he did the moonwalk on the Motown 25th,
mm-hmm.
every kid in the fifth grade is doing the moonwalk over school. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, but you know, I had to wear those penny loafers back then to school, and they're pretty smooth on the bottom. So I could, you know, I could get a little bit better at it. It was amazing. It was mind boggling. It's like, how did he even do that?
Mm-hmm.
You never see anything like that. Like, is that even possible? And you know, breakdancing was starting to kind of become big. And then he's got this move that no one else had seen before. And then of course, everyone's doing it, right? But no one did it quite like him.
Right. And you were talking about the video.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking to myself, especially for that one track, the two do not exist separately. Like, they're always, like, whenever you think of Thriller, you mm-hmm. always think of the video. You know, yes, you've heard the song a million times, and you've heard it on the radio, but it really, it's not the same thing without seeing the video, too. I mean, you had John Landis direct mm-hmm. it.
That's right.
And Rick Baker do the
special effects.
Special effects.
Yeah,
right, correct.
Makeup, yeah.
Academy Award winner, who, of course, did the original American Werewolf in London.
That's right. And did basically everything that Eddie Murphy has ever done. Anytime he does a movie and he mm-hmm. plays different characters, you know, like whether it's like playing all the different clumps, right, in The Nutty Professor, or the different stuff that he does, anytime he does that, Rick Baker is his guy. And I don't know how many Oscars Rick Baker's won, but they probably ought to rename it the Rick Baker Oscar for makeup, you know, because he's nominated like every year and he's won a ton. He's a genius that way. But I mean, yeah, from October 18th is when the first single came out of 1982 through November 5th of 1983, when the last single came out. This kind of chart dominance, you'll never see again.
And you could almost argue that there was a 7 singles, so an 8th single off that record, but not really, because Say 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 came out in October of 83.
That's right.
And I'm going to bet you most people thought that was off of Thriller at the time.
Possibly. It certainly had the wind in its sails. And yes, in that same box, I had The Pipes of Peace by Paul McCartney, partly because it had Say 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 on it. Now, I have to correct myself. You were right. It had already sold off the wall 10 million copies.
Oh, by the time Thriller came out.
By the time Thriller came out. Now it's 20 million. So it got another 10 million thanks to that. And about half of that is in the United States. But no, yeah, I was incorrect about that. So you're right. It had sold 10 million. So it had done awfully well around the world. And that's why you get the $750,000, equating to $2.3 million today. Good Lord. We got to start getting into this, but Jesus.
Yeah, and I was going to say, that's when you start to, you wonder if the hype or the legend of the record takes over. Because from what I was reading, like, he wanted to make this record. He wanted to make a record where every single track on there could be a single.
Mm-hmm.
So was that really the case? I don't know. I mean, it sounds about right, especially if you're coming off of a big record, you want one that's even bigger. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, that was Mutt Lange telling Def Leppard, all right, great. You got 3 or 4 singles off Pyromania. Next one, yeah, 5, 6, 7. And they did. Mm-hmm. Basically. But I mean, you could see the talent all around. Obviously, Quincy Jones is a genius producer. I think he's got the most Grammys of all time, like 50 or something. Sick like that. And if I'm not mistaken, Thriller won about 8. But I mean, some of that was to Quincy. And then Quincy kind of continued to win Grammys over the years. But if you look at some of the people who contributed to this album, because usually we do albums and it's like, oh, and by the way, this person played guitar on track 6, but it's mostly the band, or this person came in and threw some stuff in here. The people, like the personnel who also contributed to this album besides Quincy and Michael, is unbelievable. And I can't name everybody, and we don't know who all these people are. Some of them are going to be amazing. We don't really know who they are. But David Foster, well, we know who he is, right? I mean, the incredible songwriter, producer.
I was going to say, speaking of tons of Grammys.
Yeah, he has about 18, though.
Yeah.
you know, nothing compared to Quincy Jones. You know, he did keyboard on The Girl Is Mine, so he could, you know, get on a Paul McCartney tune or whatever. Mm-hmm. Let's see who else here. Janet's on it. Janet and LaToya are doing background vocals on, I believe that's PYT. James Ingram, who is, you know, a talented guy, did a little keyboards on a couple stuff, did some arrangements. Lewis Johnson is a killer bass player, and mm-hmm. there's some great bass throughout this that we can point out. You know, he played on some stuff with George Benson. He played on stuff. You want me to talk about who Lewis Johnson played with over the years? Here's just part of the list. Anita Baker, Aretha Franklin, Billy Preston, Bill Withers, Bjork, Denise Williams, Donna Summer, Herbie Hancock, Irene Cara, John Mellencamp, Karen Carpenter, Kenny Loggins, Lee Ritenour, Natalie Cole, Paul McCartney, Peebo Bryson, Phil Collins, the Pointer Sisters, Sister Sledge, Stanley Clark, Stevie Nicks, Stevie Wonder, Temptations, Supremes. I mean, it's unbelievable all the talent that was there. Steve Lukather, who's most famous for being in Toto. Don Landy was the engineer because he helped with Eddie Van Halen's part on Beat It. You know, obviously Paul McCartney on track three. A lot of Toto people. David Paich, the Porcaro brothers who wrote songs. You got Vincent Price doing the voiceover on Thriller. David Williams on guitar, who I could do a similar list for David Williams as far as all the people he's played with. So there's all these like unbelievably talented, you might call them session people, but these are people who had long careers in the music business, and people like Quincy Jones knows the good from the bad and can pick out, yes, you're going to come in on this track. I just need a little bit of this from you here. I mean, there's like six drummers and eight people who play synthesizer or something crazy on this thing.
Well, that was the whole thing with Eddie Van Halen, right? You don't go outside the band. You never do anything outside the band. It's Van Halen only. The phone rings and it's Quincy Jones. I'll be right over.
Yes, I got to do it.
Yeah, you don't say no to him. And well, actually, once he figured out it was really him, not somebody messing with him,
right?
He went right over. And no, he didn't get paid, but he didn't care.
No, and there was a great, I remember a Guitar Player magazine, I think it was, or maybe Guitar World. There was a great like comic, basically, that they put in there about the day that he got the call from Quincy Jones, like, hello, 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 boom, and he slams down the phone. And he calls back, well, this better be good. Hello, hey, it's Quincy Jones, want to come down here? Oh, yeah, sure, okay, fine. He comes down and lights it up. But we'll get there. There's a lot to get to on this album.
All right, let's start from the beginning here.
Hi, my name is Renee Richardson from the Metallica Report, and you're listening to The Ugly American Werewolf in London. Did I get that right?
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month. So just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
Start from the beginning. Track one, Wanna Be Starting Something. There's a lot of stuff on this. A lot of synthesizer, a lot of technology, kind of a disco song, kind of an R&B song.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little surprised they started off with it, but it is an upbeat track and you want to start upbeat. So yeah, I remember you put this on and you're kind of off and running with Wanna Be Starting Something. Do you remember hearing this on the radio?
Oh yes. Yeah, I think the drum beat on this doesn't get enough credit because it's pretty cool. And it didn't sound like anything else. Like, yeah, you're right. Like, what kind of song is this? Well, it's kind of this and it's kind of that. And it's kind of its own thing, too. And it's interesting that a lot of this stuff from the early 80s has aged pretty well.
Yeah, I
like,
mean,
you could put this on now and people would still, like, if you put it on in a club, people would get
people
excited.
People would go off. Absolutely, yeah. They would. Which is weird because by 1982, disco was persona non grata. You mm-hmm. know, it's like nobody wants disco. R&B is cool, but no disco. And it's obviously got some pieces of that. It was the fourth single. It was released May 8th of 83, and it was backed with Rock With You Live, Rock With You being from Off the Wall, of course. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's programmed. I mean, it sounds like zero like live instruments were played during this. I mean, except for maybe then are there horns? I don't know. But number five on the Billboard chart, number eight in the UK, number one in Canada. They're loving it up in Canada there and in the Netherlands where I used to live. But it went platinum. It's a platinum single.
Single.
In the US. It's unbelievable. Now, mm-hmm. it's upbeat, but if you listen to the lyrics, it's a little bit paranoid, you know, that everybody's kind of talking about you or after you. And it's talking about don't have a baby if you can't take care of the baby.
Yeah.
Doing research, I had no idea that he originally wrote this for LaToya.
All right.
And then it was going to maybe be on Off the Wall or something. And then we changed it around and updated a little bit and put it on the front side of this, the first song to kick off this unbelievable record. And we're off and running.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, what are they saying at the end of it?
I don't know, but I will tell you that that's another thing that everybody knows. You don't know what they're saying, but you've heard it a million times.
Exactly. So I'm a kid. I don't really know what they're saying. I look it up. It's Mama Say, Mama Sa, Mama Kusa. Mama Say, Mama Sa, Mama Kusa. Apparently, it's a hook from a 1972 single by Cameroonian musician Manu Dibango.
Okay.
From his single Soul Makossa.
All right.
And of course, eventually got sued because
I was gonna say that's coming at some point in time. You can't have that big of a deal without somebody eventually getting back to this person saying,
"Hey, that was mine." Yeah,
correct. And I'm funny. I don't see my name on the album here, and I sure haven't seen a check.
Right. So it was, you know, I guess he made the claim a few months before Michael died, and it was after Rihanna, I guess, had maybe done some kind of cover on it or something like that. They settled, and now in later releases, he's included as a songwriter on it because, you know, right now it's Michael Jackson and that's it as far as we were concerned back in the day, produced by Quincy and Michael. But they added it to that. Again, I always kind of figured it would become a single because I'd heard it so much because you play the record and you hear this from the start. You know, it's upbeat and you can start hopping around to it. It's got that Mama Say, Mama Say, Mama Got This thing at the end of it. Mama But it's not just all happy pop on here. Some of this is talking about people being, you know, not cool to you, worrying about what's going on in your life. And this is kind of a theme that kind of tracks throughout the record a lot more than Off the Wall ever did.
Mm-hmm. So this is more him growing up and talking about things that possibly affected him as an adult.
Right. Although he's still awfully young at this point. I mean, this comes out in 82, late 82. He's only 24 years old.
Yeah, but not
he's
really.
He's an old 24. Yeah, because correct. He's been performing yes. on TV and stages around the world since he's a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
But still, at 24, you're still a young person. And I don't know. I mean, some people will say those people are more mature, right? Because they've been working hard and people have been depending on them for a long time. They've been forced, you know, is it Taylor Swift a more mature 24-year-old when she's 24? I'm like, yeah, but she also like didn't really go to school. She's not
right.
around
you,
her
you
peers.
You missed out on being a child.
Right. There's some stuff yeah. you don't do well. And obviously, Michael had some issues. We're not
allegedly.
Yes, too far into all that. We're really just right. kind of wanting to review the quality of this record. But yeah, obviously, he turned into a fucking weirdo. But, you know, this is the longest song on the album at just over 6 minutes. And part of that's because it's got that kind of African jam at the end of it.
Mm.
But I like it. I mean, it's a fun way to kick off the record.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those where it's like, The beat is so synonymous. Like, you know what it is,
mm-hmm.
and it still sounds pretty fresh today.
It does. Now, all of this sounds really mm-hmm. good today, as
well,
far as I'm
not
concerned.
Not all of it, but...
Well, okay.
Because we're going to talk about that in a minute.
Yes, all right. So, and speaking of which, the next song, Baby Be Mine,
mm-hmm.
was written by an Englishman called Rodney Temperton, or Rod. Mm-hmm. Rod Temperton.
Rod to his friends, correct.
Yes, Rod to his buddies. And he worked with Quincy Jones on Off the Wall, you know, wrote Rock With You, wrote Off the Wall. So he's like, okay, of course I'm going to contribute more to the next album if Quincy wants me. He wrote Give Me the Night by George Benson,
okay.
which, you know, everybody likes, I feel like. Wrote Boogie Nights. You know, he wrote some disco hits, right? So he's like, okay, let's put him in here. He's got three rights on this album. So he wrote mm-hmm. a third of the songs on the record. However, he wrote two of those three songs were the two they did not release as singles, right?
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. he didn't necessarily write the best songs on the album. But Baby Be Mine is not a bad song. Maybe it wasn't a huge hit. And it definitely has a more disco feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
But Michael's voice is fantastic on this song. And really, the whole album. But I'm like, I really think it stands out on this one.
Yeah, that's what I have written down here, is that if this had been another person or if this had been another record, this probably would have been a single and could have even been a hit. It just yeah. gets lost on this thing.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true, you know, Baby Be Mine. I you know, I mean, you listen to this right after the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't gotten to any of the really big hits yet, although, I mean, it's hard to say that a top five record, want to be starting something, isn't a big hit. But
again, you're talking about this in the context of this record. If anybody else had a top five platinum single off a record, that would have been a hit, and that was it. Like, you hadn't heard another song off of that. You would say, yeah, that was a hit record. Yes, I had a big hit with that. But that's just, it's second best on this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you've got like three different guys playing synth and keyboard on this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, David Page, who's famous of Toto with the big kind of top hat sitting playing the piano,
yeah.
he's on this. Steve Porcaro's on it. He's also a founding member of Toto. And also Greg, I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, but Greg Filanganis, could be filling gains, but he's played with all sorts of people. All three of them are contributing keys to this at some point, you know. So there's a lot of talent being poured into this thing. Again, I liked it. I like Baby Be Mine. You know, it was, I mean, I'm 10 at the time. You know, I'm just kind of starting to kind of like girls a little bit. So I'm starting to figure out, oh, you're singing this to girls, although he probably technically wasn't. But we're not getting into that right now. We're not going down that rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of the mindset, the brain that I'm thinking of. You got to sing songs for girls. This is the kind of stuff you got to do.
And I had literally had never heard this song until probably 3 days ago.
Is that right? You never listened to Thriller with any of your friends or anything?
Wow. Nope. I had no, it because to me it was too,
it was ubiquitous. I understand.
Right. It was like I heard it all the time anyway. I didn't want to say, oh, well, I'll just listen to it on my own. But yeah, that's what I thought about this thing. This would have been a hit for anybody else.
Yeah.
But it just gets swallowed up. It's not a bad song.
No.
It's just not as strong as everything else.
Well, that's right. That's right. And that's the way you have to look at it through this lens of Thriller.
Correct.
Great song. Great folks on it. Would have been a hit for everyone else. But no one needs an eighth single off of Thriller.
Right.
But this would have been the eighth single. If there was going to be an eighth single, this would have been it. You know, we'll get to the ninth song later. Okay. Now, cruising to the third song, The Girl Is Mine, duet with Sir Paul McCartney.
Right.
And shockingly enough, at least to me, because I couldn't remember, this is the first single off the album. This came out October 18th, ahead of the release of the album, which was around Thanksgiving of 1982. Yeah, released November 29th, 1982, which I'm guessing was actually the Tuesday after Thanksgiving, if I had to guess. Because they used to release stuff on Tuesdays back then. But it's weird that a lot of the release dates on this album were around holidays of some sort.
Yeah, that's for this. Well, okay. I mean, sales-wise, who knows if that's, they were trying to pump it for that specific time. I don't know.
Maybe, but I mean, you know, Thriller comes out right after Thanksgiving, before the Christmas holiday. It's always good to get it out. You don't want to release it the week of Christmas. You want to release it before that so you can get some hype, so people get excited and then want to get it for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But the second single, Billie Jean, was released January 2nd, so right after New Year's. Beat It, the third single, was released on Valentine's Day. Human Nature was released July 3rd, right before July 4th, so it would be out for the holiday weekend. You know, and then Thriller, the song was released November 5th, but the video was released December 2nd, 1983. Again, right before the holidays. So, you know, trying to kind of capitalize on, I guess, a wave of that kind of stuff. But anyway, this is one that I guess he wrote on his own, Michael. But did he give Paul credit? He didn't.
I don't see that he did, no.
He didn't. Whereas Say, 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 I think he also wrote that. Basically on his own, but he did give Paul credit to put it on his own album.
Okay.
And look, compared to Say, 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 this is a pretty weak song. It's a little schmaltzy, right? It's a little easy listening, but that's another chart that they can go up, right? So this was number 2 on the Billboard chart, number 8 in the UK. It was backed with Can't Get Out of the Rain, which is back on some other singles too. It's a platinum single in the U.S., number 1 on the R&B chart, and number 1 on the adult contemporary chart. So that's number 1, number 1, and number 2 out of 3 big charts in the U.S. So it was a big deal, and I know that it's the first one after Off the Wall. It features Paul McCartney, so that's going to get it some attention. But the song is kind of weak.
I think if McCartney wasn't on this, you would have forgotten all about it. If he just sang it by himself or sang it with somebody else, could you make the argument that this was actually bigger for Paul McCartney than it was for Michael Jackson?
Probably.
Because he had huge success in the 70s with Wings, obviously, right, with the Beatles in the 60s. We get that. But at this point in time, he was kind of like an old person.
Old
like
news, to, yeah.
Yes, correct. And I know he did Ebony and Ivory, and that was a big hit. But again, that was with Stevie Wonder, who was another old person. So for for him to be associated with this hot young artist,
talent,
I think, kind of introduced him to a whole nother generation of people.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was the thing. They were like, Mick Jagger, you have to quit by the time you're 30. You're just going to be too old to do what you do at 30, you know, and there were no 40-year-old rock stars back then, right? I mean, Elvis was dead. Jerry Lee Lewis was a pariah, you know, Roy Orbison couldn't get arrested, you know, like they, all the old from the 50s, Chuck Berry was more underground than he was, you know, on top of the world. They're like, no, that was too long ago, right?
Yeah, at that point in time, no one cared about Frank Sinatra, all any of those guys. Like, he had a renaissance later on, but at this point in time, no.
No, you know, and so John Lennon's gone. George isn't doing a whole lot. Ringo's Ringo. Paul's like the only one out there kind of on its own. Now, he got a little bit of momentum from the Pipes of Peace album, then he kind of continued on. But yeah, I think it did a more of a power of good to Paul than it did for Michael, that's for sure. And it's interesting that it was the first single to me. I mean, I understand. You got one of the Beatles.
Right.
But then they're talking. Now, Michael, at the end, I'm like, oh, God, this is horrible. And I listened to this with the wolf cub. And she's like, is that a girl? I'm like, no, honey, that's Michael Jackson. Because his voice is so high.
That's a long and complicated story, honey. We're not going to get into that.
And
right
I don't
now.
Have time for that right now.
Sorry.
Michael, we're not going to fight about this, okay?
Paul, I think I told you. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
I've heard it all before, Michael. She told me that I'm her forever lover, you know, don't you remember?
Well, after loving me, she said she couldn't love another.
Is that what she said?
Yeah, she said it. You keep dreaming.
I don't believe it.
No, the girl is mine.
But it's silly. Right. It's just kind of silly at the end of the song there. Don't waste your time, because the 9-year-old boy is mine. Oh, wait, that's the wrong song.
Stop.
He's not 10, he's 9. Okay, let's just skip along to Thriller, the title track. And I remember the song being longer. It's just under 6 minutes. I guess I remember the video because the video was like, I don't know, 12 or something like that, 15. Yeah. It was longer because they had to make room to have all that choreographed zombie dance move. And obviously I listened to it on the album many times before it came out as a single or before they made the video. And that's kind of weird, honestly, because they make this epic video. Well, obviously, it had sold so well. They had plenty of money to make this epic video and to do the making of film and give MTV something they could show besides just a 5-minute video, long video, the making of, which was half an hour or more. And so it doesn't shock you that they not only released this, but had this huge, huge video to go along with it. What I didn't realize was in 84, it won the Grammy for Single of the Year, Thriller.
Okay.
Shocking to me, to be honest with you, because it's the seventh single. It's the last of seven singles. And that one wins a Grammy. Not to mention goes number 4 in the US, number 10 in the UK. So it's top 10 both coasts. It's a diamond single in the US. 10 million in sales on the single in the US alone. Backed with Things I Do For You, it was double platinum single in the UK. It's unbelievable, the sales from this album and this, and obviously this is a big part of it, but I think the video, and I wonder what it was like in the UK, because they could maybe show parts of the video on Top of the Pops. It got to number 10, but it was on, I mean, if you were sick from school at that time and you watched MTV for like 15 hours that day, you probably saw it 12 times, man. They ran the hell out of it.
Right. And they did. They had the big premiere. I remember that. And then for the most part, they would show the shorter version, even of the video. But if you were lucky, like you were talking about watching it for 10 hours a day, they would show the entire 15-minute deal. And then you thought you were the king of the world. Exactly. If you got to see that.
See the whole thing.
Correct.
Now I will admit, even though I was 10 years old, I'm a little bit more grown up. The video is a little scary.
It's pretty intense, for and especially for back then.
Yeah.
You know, you hadn't seen The Walking Dead had not come out yet for many, many years. And yeah, I was watching it again for this. I'm like, yeah, the zombies are like, there's crap coming off of them. And there's one guy, like there's stuff coming out of his mouth. And yeah, it's intense. The Rick Baker did a... Heck very good job.
Yeah, no, yeah. They're coming out of the ground and they're doing that drag in their leg, but they're still coming at you thing. I'm like, it's a little scary. But then when they start to dance and they can really move, I'm like, okay, zombies can't move like that, man. only Michael Jackson and professional dancers. But that was a big thing. Honestly, man, to me, if you need all that dancing to sell the music, a lot of times to me, it's because the music isn't that good. Like if you're Dua Lipa or Lipa Sinka, as I call her, you know, yeah, she needs all that dance stuff because, I mean, are the songs really that good? And she's not really singing it, right? She's lip syncing it. But Michael would sing it, and he had these incredible, as a dancer, maybe Usher comes close. But other than that, I've never seen anybody else move the way Michael Jackson does on stage while he's performing. Stop your heart. You try to scream, but dare I take the sound before you make it? And you start to freeze, and so it looks you right between the eyes. You're paralyzed, cause this is Dealer, Dealer Night, and no one's gonna save you from the beat. The bug strike, you know it's Dealer.
And he, with this video, screwed over an entire couple of years, because if you go back and watch these videos of the time, once he did the dance video, everybody had to do a dance video.
Pretty much.
Up to and including people who couldn't dance. So you had these things where, like, you know, they had background dancers, and the person who was the actual star of the video was like sitting in a chair off to the side. There was some, I can't remember which one it was. It was a Stevie Nicks video. And it was like that. I'm like, oh, she can't.
Yeah.
She's got her little, like, but
she's
can't,
got the ballet dance thing, but she can't do it. That. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So she's kind of like, she's off, like she's admiring the people or something. I'm like, because that's like, everybody has to do that now. That in 1 second, he set the standard for what music videos were going to be for probably 10 years.
And what about his sister, Janet? I mean, that whole,
well, she didn't have a problem.
Rhythm Nation totally okay thing. Yeah, exactly. That's her whole career is basically correct. Doing that kind of stuff. You know, Paula Abdul comes along. Oh, I can dance in my videos too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Might not be a great singer, but I'm a hell of a dancer. So let's go to it. You know? Yeah, no, you're right. Any of those folks, they had to do that. Even Pat Benatar had to do some of that stuff. Correct. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
So now adding Vincent Price on it is cool. I got to say, he really lends a good creepiness to it. He sounds really good on it. And I'm like, what a pro. And I bet they didn't pay him much. I mean, I bet they paid him for that day, whatever his rate was. But I bet he didn't get rich off of this. It was Quincy and Michael, and then maybe Rod, who made all the money. But this is another Rod Wright, and this is the Rod Wright that gets him paid to this day, right?
Because I didn't realize that either. I thought Michael and or Quincy would have had a hand in this, but no, this was all. So this is a 10 million seller single that you wrote by yourself. Nice. Cha-ching.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're getting paid, my man. Getting paid forever, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, just for what they count on the page, I can count about 15 million in sales on the single worldwide. So it's probably higher than that.
Unless you were a huge fan, I don't understand why you would have bought a single off of this record. Because you buy a single because it's like, well, I don't really like this one. Mm-hmm. You didn't like the rest of the record? Come on, just cough it up and buy the whole thing.
By the way, I'm pretty sure he says Thriller, not Thriller. Because this is Thriller. See, he's not using the first R in Thriller most of the time. Take a listen to it. It sounds like Thriller, but that's just me.
Well, you know, the other thing I forgot about too until I watched this again was there was that disclaimer at the beginning, because he was a big Jehovah's Witness about how, like, you know, this has nothing to do with the occult. I don't believe in that. And
one's coming back from the dead.
Correct.
This is just a show. Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Hi, this is Jim McCarty of the Yardbirds, and you're listening to The Ugly American Werewolf in London.
All right. Now, here's an interesting part. That's the end of side one.
Okay.
Generally speaking, if you had three top 10 singles, three platinum singles, one of them a diamond single, making it one of the greatest of all time, you'd think, that's great. That's the strength of the album. You could put Filler on the back, and that's probably what they did, right? Wrong.
or
wrong. The bigger hits, to me anyway, are on the second side. And that's the crazy part about it, man, is that
You're just getting started.
Billie Jean are on the second side of the album. It's unbelievable. So let's get into it then. Because Beat It to me, see now, as a rock guy, this is the rock song on the record.
Correct.
And this was always my favorite. I think my moms and everyone in my orbit back then liked Billie Jean better. And that's fine. You can like Billie Jean better if you want. It's got a great groove to it. Him walking on those light up, you know, tiles on the video. That's amazing. We'll get into that in just a second. So, but the third single, which was backed with Burn This Disco Out in the UK, was backed with Get on the Floor in the US, comes out February of 83, goes to number one in the US, number three in the UK, 11 million worldwide, 8 million in the US alone on the single. And a lot of that's thanks to, of course, the video, where it shows basically two rival gangs get ready to go throw down, right? The guys in the bar saying, come on, let's get out of here. The guys jumping, coming out of the shadows, coming out of the sewers. But meanwhile, Michael is sitting in his single bed with the keyboard shirt on.
Correct.
Like singing and getting ready, you know, and then he walks through the empty bar. He walks through the empty pool hall that they were in getting ready for. I mean, what did you think of this video when it came out?
I mean, I thought it was pretty cool. It wasn't like a Thriller. So it was, you know, it's kind of had the story to it. Even back then, I thought, I understand what we're doing here, but these guys don't look all that tough to me. I don't think street gangs who are going to kill each other look like these guys, but who knows? Although I'm about to ruin this for you. So this was pointed out to me not too long ago. When he's singing by the pool tables, they don't have holes. There are no holes in the pool table.
Well, so those are billiards tables, right?
I don't know what they are. All I know is that it's a Greenfeld table with no pockets in it. So I don't know whether it's a prop or what the deal is, but I can't unsee that now.
Well, no, there are billiards tables, like, because there's pool and there's snooker and then there's billiards where there are no. It's basically about what angle you hit it at and where the ball ends up. There's no pockets like regular pool like the rest of us would play. So in a big pool hall, yeah, you would probably have some of those. It's not real popular, but yeah, some people do play it. I think it's actually bigger in England than it is here.
So we came here to play pool. I don't play pool, Mr. Belton. I play billiards.
But yeah, I always thought that was that was the other thing too. So this is about gangs and fighting and being a tough person. Mm-hmm. And I guess it turns out in doing research for this, it's something to do with him growing up in the worst place on the face of the earth, Gary, Indiana, and just seeing people fight all the time. But yeah, that keyboard shirt kind of takes you out of takes you out of it. You're trying to be tough and you're wearing that. Okay.
And they did actually have some real gang members as like extras on the set, but the dancers were obviously not gang members.
Correct.
And look, as someone who grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, a lot of places in Indiana are the worst place to grow up, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, Gary's a little working class. It's not, you know, it's like the Jacksons are from there and that's all they really celebrate, I feel like. But look, Steve Lukather of Toto fame played guitar and bass on this. So the main riff, that's him. The Picaro brothers, Jeff and Steve, both played on this. So this is, you know, it's a very Toto song, believe it or not. But then what made it so special, at least to my rock and roll ears, is Eddie Van Halen coming in and ripping that up.
Okay, but at that point in time, you had no idea who Van Halen was, right?
That's right. I didn't really know till the summer of 84.
I didn't either. And so you're like, yeah, what is this? This doesn't sound like anything I've ever heard before. I was under the impression that whoever played that played the rest of the album, played the rest of the track too, which is not true. But yeah, then it was 84 came out, and then it was oh yeah, by the way, do you know he played on Michael Jackson's record? No, he didn't. And then you listen, you're like, as soon as you hear it again, yes, that's like, exactly
it's obvious who it is. It couldn't really be anybody else. Yeah. That's right. And so to me, this was always my favorite. I mean, it's a rock song, and it comes out, it's winter of 83, but it was big in the spring of 83 and certainly into the summer of 83. And to me, this is the one that, like you say, what's the best song off of Thriller? I automatically say Beat It. Without thinking, I say Beat It. I could maybe change my mind on that if I really listened to all these more and take out the qualities that some of them have. But I'm too emotionally connected to Beat It, and I listened to it a million times. And that was what was great about having it as song one on the second side, is that you could listen to Thriller, flip it, and then you can listen to Beat It.
Ah, okay.
You know, and listen to Beat It all the way through. Or you could always just rewind it. Oh, let's hear it again. Didn't know who Steve Lukather was, obviously. He's not in the video. Didn't really know Correct. Who Toto was. I mean, I guess I knew Africa and Rosanna, but that came out around the same time. So, you know, Toto's kind of on fire here too, right? If Toto 4 comes out, or was that might have been 82. So if Toto 4, which is obviously their biggest seller. Yeah, it came out in March of 82. And then throughout 82, they helped make this. Those guys are establishing themselves as huge, like, songwriters and session guys. Luke's played on like 3,000 records or something like that. Something crazy like that, you know. So I mean, they're established. Of course, I think like most all of their fathers were like composers or you know, professional musicians in some way. So they had the goods. But yeah, Michael wrote this on his own. Although I think Don Landy helped engineer Eddie's part and Beat It.
Well, there's an interview that with Eddie Van Halen that says that he claims that he went in there and reworked parts of this, more than just the solo. So I don't know what was going on with that. But when you have the argument of what's the best Eddie Van Halen solo, this has got to be up there in the top. I mean, it's still pretty hot. And I know he didn't play on the rest of the track, but that is a standalone piece. It's pretty strong.
I know. And I'm sorry that we never really got to see him and Michael Jackson do it together. Because why not? Why not bring him up one night somewhere to have him do it? Because like doing research for The Girl Is Mine, neither of them ever played that live. Neither Michael or Paul never played it. Now, I understand why Paul didn't play it, because it wasn't his song. He doesn't have anyone to sing with Michael with him. And you're not going to do that end part with anyone but Michael, right?
Yeah.
But there was never a special occasion. There was never an awards ceremony. There was never one show. Michael's in London and they break it out. No, neither of them ever played it live. And part of it's because it's kind of weak. But it would have been awesome to sometime have Eddie step up and do this. Now, I understand this comes out before 1984, so Eddie's big in the rock world, but he didn't have that huge status that he got once
mainstream
1984 came out. And he wants to say, just keep it in the band, right? Keep it in the band. All right.
You know that now, but though, how cool would that have been if they had done an entire like Thriller cover to cover and brought all those people out?
Wow.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I mean, that would be crazy. I mean, yeah, they'd have to set up, they'd have to change stuff between songs, like they're changing equipment between bands.
Right.
Now it's just between songs because all these other people got to come out there. Now, there's a ton of talent on this, no doubt about it. I love Beat It. But Billie Jean may have been bigger, and it did kind of hit number one all around the world. But this is Louis Johnson really standing out to me as far as I'm concerned. I always love the bass on this one.
Interesting. Okay. Because that's apparently an interesting story. In 1985, when they were doing We Are the World, apparently there were so many people there that there were no handlers. Like it was just artists and that was it. There was too many. So basically, this is Daryl Hall now saying it was like being back in high school where it was like, oh, hey, Bruce Springsteen. I think you're pretty cool, man. So So Michael Jackson tracks him down, Daryl Hall, and he's like, "Oh, I just want to tell you that I ripped off I Can't Go for That." That's the baseline to I Can't Go for That. And apparently Daryl Hall said, "And I ripped it off from somebody else." And right. That's just what we do.
That's the way it works.
That was the end of the conversation.
Yeah. We're not suing each other. That's
right.
That's,
but you're right. That is a sick baseline.
And then the video with him stepping on those tiles, and maybe there's a tiger around there.
Yeah. Okay.
Because look, on the cassette here, I got it. Long form cassette. There he is with a little tiger.
When you flip it open.
Yeah. So that was kind of part of it. And that's it, by the way. It's like, there's no notes on this original cassette. It's like, the songs are listed on the front underneath Michael. You see Michael stretched out on the inside. It's the same shot. It's just, you can see on his leg, he's got like a tiger cub, and that's it. There's not much to it.
So there's no information about who wrote the songs, who played on the songs. There's nothing in there.
It may see produced by Quincy Jones somewhere on the side here.
Okay.
I can't really read it because my eyes aren't that good. But yeah, I mean, no, it says it on the cassette. Produced by Quincy Jones for Quincy Jones Productions. But Billie Jean was, I mean, obviously it's about a girl.
Correct.
Was it?
I guess it depends on who you listen to. Apparently, back in the day, because Michael was the youngest and he had his older brothers. Apparently, this was a pretty common occurrence with people coming to them and writing them saying, "Hey, this is your kid," and
they're right.
Like, "Okay, you need to take a big step back because no."
Yeah, Tito's the father. No, he's sterile. I mean, Jermaine's the father. He was dating someone else at the time. Marlon's the father.
You're just going through. Wait, who else is in the band? Okay, yes.
Michael's the father. He only likes boys. Ah, damn it. I got to get one of these guys. Now, it was released January 2nd, backed with Can't Get Out of the Rain in the U.S., and it's The Falling in Love in the U.K. Went to number one. Almost everywhere in the world, second single off here. I mean, certainly in the U.S., but like U.S. on several charts. Year-end chart, it was only number two. But number one Cashbox, number one Hot Black Singles, number one Hot 100, number one U.K., Switzerland, Spain, Italy, Ireland, France, Canada, Australia. And that doesn't include the places that it was number two. Mm-hmm. I mean, went to number three in Zimbabwe, diamond in the U.S., diamond single in the U.S., triple platinum in the U.K., double diamond in Mexico, damn near diamond in Australia. I mean, tens of millions of copies of this song out there. It's unbelievable. And they didn't even have, most of these countries didn't really have the benefit of MTV to sell it like we had it here, you know?
So then this was probably the first record that really had a worldwide phenomenon. Like there were records that were big in certain parts, but I mean, this is everywhere in the world knew this one.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, and it's appealing to the pop and it's appealing to the R&B and it's appealing to the easy listening and adult contemporary, and it's appealing with Beat It. That would get on the rock channel, you know. I mean, all of this stuff was doing, and then thanks to MTV, it's like just throwing gasoline on a fire, man. It's unbelievable. But I wonder if, because I believe him, and watching his brothers go through all this, like there's always girls saying, you know, "I'm pregnant with your child." I wonder if that scared him away from grown women a little bit when he was a little kid. It's like all they're trying to do is get pregnant, and then they're trying to sue you and get in, you know, get your money and get into your life that way. And I wonder if that helped him keep him at arm's length a little bit more, right?
It had to be very, very hard to have any kind of personal relationship with somebody who was not in your orbit. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, you would always, seeing that as a kid, yes, that's the first thing you would think of is they're just trying to come after my money or to break me over.
Get pregnant. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So apparently, like, when he was making this record beginning to make this record, that was his deal. He was famous. He had money, but he had no life, really. Like, he was just alone. Mm-hmm. So it was a very strange place to be in. Everybody loves you, but no one really knows you.
Yeah, and like his father was so hard on him and used to, you know, beat the kids, not to mention work the hell out of them to make sure they were perfect. Now, anytime you saw them on TV or in concert, they were pretty perfect. I mean, they had the dance moves down, they had the singing down, they let Tito play the bass or whatever. But I mean, yeah, I mean, they had the moves down. They were professionals, but yeah, it robbed them of their childhood. And then something like falling in love or starting to get girls to be interested in you or whatever, even that's kind of ruined because it's kind of ruined by your brothers always being accused or having to deal with lawsuits or all this other nonsense. So it's like, yeah, you're right. I better stay away from these people.
And this, and this had to be a weird time too for everybody else because, you know, the Jackson Five were very successful.
Yeah.
And then he takes off and everybody else, like I know like the rest of them had records they put out. Or some of them did. Tito and Jermaine had records, but nothing like this. And it's kind of like now you're just left in the dust, and you know you're doing your thing, and all anybody wants to talk about is Michael. Yeah. So you know, how's your brother? Well, you know, he's great. Thanks.
And of course, eventually he did the Victory record and tour with his brothers,
right?
So as not to leave him in the dust. It's like, okay, you're huge. You're the biggest thing in the world. Now what are you gonna do? Well, now I'm going to go back into an album with my brothers. Because there, he could have left them and never even spoken to any of them again.
Correct. Right?
But I think the family's like, look, you need to spread this around a little bit. Mm-hmm. Why don't you go back out with the Jacksons? Because now Randy was in the band. He was too little to be in the Jackson 5. So they're not the Jackson 5 anymore. Now they're the Jacksons. And they do the Victory Tour, which is huge. Huge. Big for the other guys. But, you know, it's... Michael's the obvious superstar here. And they all kind of need to, because yeah, I remember Jermaine's do what you did to me song. Yeah. Chris Rock had a big, he goes, I'm about to do what you do when you did what you did to me album, Jermaine. Love Chris Rock. All right. We got to keep moving on here because
there's, keep going here.
There's more platinum singles to come. Somehow the third song, which was the fifth single released on the album, is Human Nature, which of course went to number 7 in the U.S., number 2 on Adult Contemporary, backed with Baby Be Mine. So there's Rod getting himself into another platinum U.S. single on the B-side. I like this one, though. It's chill. It's chill. It's more easy listening Adult Contemporary than some of the other stuff is, but I like it.
So this is a Steve Porcaro write. So correct. It's a different, it's got a kind of a different feel to it. Lucifer's on the guitar again. So it's not quite as rocking, but it just has a really different feel to it. Some of the lyrics are a little strange, although I see now what we were talking about before, I see this now in this track of him desperately wanting to make a connection with somebody,
you know,
reaching out to touch a stranger. I wouldn't recommend that.
Right.
Probably not good. But just that desperate, you know, wanting to be
with somebody, have some kind of human connection.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not just people trying to make money off of you, you know?
Right. And, yeah. People that don't see you as a commodity, which I don't think he ever had anybody that didn't, you know, from his family to anybody that he was remotely connected with, it was always a money deal.
Yeah, even Quincy, who probably was a father figure to him and took really good care of him and obviously helped him make great records. But still, that's still a transactional business relationship on some level, you know?
Right.
What I didn't realize is that Steve Porcaro wrote this song of Toto, and he wrote it for his daughter. Because she was a kid, she's like 9 or 10, and some boy's hitting her in school. He's like, well, honey, it's probably because he likes you, and it's just human nature. And so he wrote this song kind of for her, and then they had John Bettis come in and change the lyrics to more like, you know, walking through the streets of New York, you know, trying to reach out and make a connection that way. So it was a Porcaro song, but they had John Bettis change the lyrics so it would fit Michael more. You know, and like being in Studio 54 is great, but yet it's still odd because it's all about famous people who just want to take a picture or be next to you or that kind of thing. There's no real connection there. It's fake, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's much better as a Michael Jackson R&B song than it ever would have been as a Toto, you know, adult contemporary mid-range song. You know what I mean?
Right. And even though this is, And this is the tough part, is that it was a single. It did well. It didn't do as well as some of the other ones, but I mean, this is still a pretty good song. Again, you know, you put this on, you're like, oh yeah, I remember this one.
Yeah.
This was pretty good.
And it's that kind of keyboard. It's great. The production on here is unbelievable. There's so many layers of production. This is one of those where, like, you put it on the killer stereo, right? With the best speakers in the world, with the little tips on the ends of them, and do the surround sound, and, you know, SACD and whatever it is, whatever the highest quality, this would stand out in a big way because there's so many little things going around all over the place.
Yeah, it's more like it's scored. It's got more of an orchestral.
Absolutely.
Composition to it.
And that's Quincy. And that's Quincy and his genius, throwing in horns all over the place, lots of different keyboards, some programmed drum stuff, but then also some real bass. It's just, and then Michael's voice, crisp and clear. It's beautiful. I mean, I got to admit, I haven't listened to this much since 1984, maybe at all. For whatever reason, they tend to play this a lot on some of the easier listening stations around Louisville here, because the rock stations around here kind of suck. And it's like they play Guns N' Roses, Bon Jovi, Pat Benatar, like the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and Led Zeppelin. Like, you can't go through that. I could play bingo. Like, how long is it going to be before I hear Bon Jovi? How long is it going to be before I hear Pat Benatar? So I flip around to different stations, and they're playing a lot of Michael Jackson. And the wolf comes like, this is nice. Is that a girl, Daddy? No, honey, it's Michael Jackson. But you're right. It's an amazing song. It's beautiful. It was the biggest thing in the whole world. I'll play it for you one day. But we're going to move along.
All right.
To the eighth track, or track four on the second side.
Mm-hmm.
PYT.
Yes.
Pretty Young Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This was a little funkier. This has got a little bit more of a funk beat to it.
Little different, yeah. And it's quicker paced. This was the sixth of the seven singles.
Mm-hmm.
Backed with This Place Hotel in the UK, and then Working Day and Night, or the Thriller instrumental in the U.S.
All right.
It did get to number 10 in the U.S., which makes it another top 10 hit. 11 in the U.K. Four times platinum as a single in the U.S. alone. The high-pitched thing at the end.
Yeah, okay.
It's a little gimmicky, but you know exactly what it was. I mean, you hear that, like, oh, yeah, it's PYT. And there's like, Pretty Young Thing. Yeah. I'm like, are you talking about fucking Pretty Young Things? Because that's kind of what it sounds like. Pretty Young Thing. And he's like, repeat after me. Na 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 na. They're really high. Na 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 na. Because the people he really liked had very high voices?
I don't know.
I don't really want to get into it.
Well, but again, at this point in time, none of that had come to light at all.
Right.
And I think I do remember Ronald Reagan making a reference to this. Like, he was trying to be cool, you know, like blah, 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 and all the PYTs out there or something like that. I'm like, wow, it's... And I remember Michael Jackson going to the White House and meeting with Ron and Nancy. And just thinking, like, yeah, this dude is the biggest thing on the face of the earth. Because, I mean, when you can go there and have it wasn't part of anything. Like, he was visiting there as an event. Just
showing enormous. Up, like, hey,
Yeah.
So the PYTs included his sisters, Janet and LaToya, doing that high pitch part. Someone named Becky Lopez, someone named Bunny Hull, and also Mindy Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
Who is most famous for being Natalie on The Facts of Life. She's also done a lot of work as Velma in latter-day Scooby-Doo cartoons. How did she get on there?
It was actually, I saw something randomly on YouTube about that. She was a friend of somebody who knew somebody who, like, she was at the studio that day. And they're like, why don't you just come in and sing? And there's like, there's no way that's a real story. And then at the end, they flashed a picture up with her and everybody else, you know, LaToya and Janet and Michael Jackson. I'm like, I guess it is real.
It's true.
Yeah.
Bizarre. I had no idea, of course. But yeah, you know, and it it hit, I mean, charted around the world, did awfully well in the U.S., number 10, 4 million in sales alone in the U.S. So that's another at least 5 million selling single. So the numbers are really starting to add up here now, Jackson. I mean, you've got two diamond singles. You've got multi-platinum singles besides that. And the album itself, I mean, we're talking between the singles and the album, 150 million units in sales. That's unbelievable.
It's just I knew this was a big seller. Like you just have that in the back of your mind. Okay, I understand that. But yeah, when you really start looking at it, this will never happen again, ever in a million years. It was too universally accepted.
Exactly. Everyone liked it. Old people, young people, college kids, white people, black people, Hispanic people, people all over the world, every different chart.
Probably people that hadn't bought a record in 10 years. So like, music, blah, blah. Oh, I'm Thriller. You know, I have a copy
gotta
of
have
that.
This. Yeah. You know, and then between PYT and Thriller coming out, Say comes out with the video of them being like minstrels who are traveling across the land back in the day, like doing their shows. To me, it's way better than The Girl Is Mine. I mean, it's right. Like not even close. It's a platinum single. It's number one in the U.S. It's number two in the U.K. Mm-hmm. I mean, Michael Jackson could have taken a shit and put it on vinyl and it would have gotten to the top 20, I'm sure, at this point, man. Just unstoppable. But that brings us to the ninth song on the album, The Lady in My Life, the third penned by our buddy Rod here. Mm-hmm. I will admit that this may be the first time I listened to the song all the way through.
Okay.
As far as I was concerned, this was a new song. Because after you hit Beat It, Billie Jean, Human Nature, PYT.
You're done.
Yeah, you're pretty well done. And then you hear this, I don't know this, let's just fast forward to it. And flip it and listen to the whole thing again, right? Mm-hmm. That was my mentality. So I really don't remember this one at all.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I've never heard this until 3 days ago. But this, I think this is another one where it's kind of generic. It's kind of
it is.
Of the time. But had this been somebody else, it probably would have been a single. Probably would have been a moderate hit. It's not a bad song. It just gets swallowed up by this thing.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if George Benson or somebody like that.
Yeah,
had
that's
done
what
it.
I'm thinking. Yeah, it probably would have been a hit on Adult Contemporary or something. It's kind of a fairly catchy. But it's kind of forgettable. But it just wasn't going to stand out on this thing.
No, it's easy listening. You'd probably call it a ballad. It's very slow compared to the rest of the stuff on the record. But there is a lot going on underneath. Like you can tell Quincy has just produced the heck out of it. Some of the horns have a little bit of a Chicago feel to it in a couple of spots there, I feel like. Girl, you're this world to me, a treasure time won't steal away. So listen to my heart, lay your body close to mine. Let me fill you with my dream. I can make you feel alright. And baby, but yeah, it's just. At this point, it's like I can't take anymore. It's just there's too many enormous hits. 7 top 10 hits in the United States of America. 7 platinum singles.
But I think with that being said, it is, hold on. I think the album is only 42 minutes long.
Yeah.
So now I can see why you would say, we got to put one more on here to make it.
Right.
An album length. So, you know, what else do we have?
And we mentioned some songs that were B-sides that didn't end up on the album. So, and I'm sure they're part of the deluxe repackages. And there must have been some of those over the years. I never bought it. And I never bought anything of Michael Jackson's after this period. In 83, 84, 85, Michael Jackson, huge. Michael Jackson sitting on top of the world. Axel Foley wrote a story about in Rolling Stone magazine about it. He interviewed him for it, right? It's huge. I know Bad came along later, and obviously the Victory Tour was good for his family, but I had tuned out at that point. I was a rock guy at that point and wasn't into Bad.
I think Bad didn't come out till like 87,
That's
I
right.
think.
Yeah.
And at that point in time, that had passed me by.
Now, it was huge, and I think it was at least double diamond in the U.S. or something mm-hmm. like that. It wasn't like his career was over, and he kind of continued the theme of, you know, he's going to have these dance videos and stuff like that. But it was just, there was a moment in time, Michael Jackson, that early to mid-80s period, biggest thing in the world. It's like you couldn't, no matter what you did after Thriller, it wasn't going to be as big. It doesn't matter.
Right. And that's the problem is that, yeah, like you said, no matter what it is, even if for anybody else, they would kill to have the bad record.
Yeah.
But for him, it's a letdown.
And even, I mean, that's when Weird Al Yankovic came into the picture for me. He'd already existed. He had I Love Rocky Road and some stuff like that. But when he did Eat It mm-hmm. on his In 3D album, that catapulted him to platinum status because it's got a Michael Jackson. Not to mention, he did the video and he wore the same costume kind of, and in some of the same places, even got some of the same dancers in the video, you know? So to me, the reason Weird Al is so big today is really Michael Jackson and his Eat It song.
Yeah.
Obviously he did Fat for Bad, but I mean, he made his name really to me off Eat It, from Beat It, from Thriller, from Michael Jackson.
Right. Yeah. And that is crazy to think that you have a whole person with an entirely separate career basically launched from the same deal.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So not getting into any of his personal stuff, because that's a waste of our time. Yeah,
correct.
We don't need to get into all that. But as far as the power of this record, it's unmatched. And mm-hmm. going back and listening to it now, boy, the production's unbelievable. His voice is unbelievable.
That's what I was kind of thinking too. Like if you go back and listen to a lot of these records from this time, you're mm-hmm. going to say, yeah,
that's 1983. I can hear it sounds, in the keyboard, yeah, you know,
it sounds dated. I mean, there are a couple moments, but overall not really. I mean, it still sounds pretty fresh today. And also it's probably something that most people would know. Even today, even people who didn't grow up with this, you still have that. It carried forward into generations past.
That's right. And I just always wonder what it's like for like a 25-year-old, someone who's 25 years old now, right? So they were born in 98. And then when they're 8 or 9 in the mid-2000s or whatever, would if they heard this, it couldn't have the same effect on them. I mean, it could sonically, they could hear, oh, wow, that's really amazing. Yes, he's got a great voice. But not being there when it comes out, seeing the videos on MTV, mm-hmm. being there for the premiere of Thriller, right? Seeing him on Motown 25 doing the moonwalk. You can go back and see it, but if you didn't live through it, and I, you know, like our buddy Sonny Pooney's like that, is like, if it didn't come out while I was into music, then it's old, you know, then I didn't listen to it, you know? And Travis was like that in college. He's like, oh, that's old, man. That came out before I knew what was what. I'm like, yeah, but it's still awesome, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But so I guess I sound like if you didn't grow up when I did, you missed out. You could be older, but you couldn't be much younger and have the same appreciation for Thriller as we do.
Correct. But you may without knowing it, because you were mentioning like you mentioned Usher, mm-hmm. right, before. Where do you think he figured all this out? On his own? Not so much.
Yeah.
He was listening to Thriller. If you listen to The Weeknd.
Yeah.
He's huge now. He is. You would swear that was a Michael Jackson ripoff. I mean, the influence that this had, everything in probably R&B after this, there's some piece of Michael Jackson somewhere in this.
Absolutely. And, you know, Quincy Jones was already kind of a legend. Now he's like alone by himself. Like he might have been mm-hmm. on a Mount Rushmore of great legends. Now it's just Quincy Jones and there's nobody else there. But look at these single releases. Girl Is Mine, October 18th, 82. Billie Jean, January 2nd, 83. Beat It, February 14th. Wanna Be Starting Something, May 8th. Human Nature, July 3rd. PYT, September 19th. Throw in Say, Say, Say in like October. And then Thriller, November 5th. I mean, just you couldn't get away from it
right.
if you wanted to.
That's an entire, it's a year and change of it never going away.
Yeah. And then MTV's on fire because they've got this huge Michael Jackson premiere Thriller video on December 2nd. And then a few days later, they've got Asia in Asia, the first ever satellite broadcast, you know, around the world. So that was a huge month for MTV. In retrospect, the Michael Jackson Thriller premiere was a lot bigger than Asia in Asia ever was or will be.
Right, but still very ambitious for a fledgling cable channel.
Only 2 years old, right? Yeah, absolutely. Now, so, God, what if David Geffen had been behind Michael Jackson? How much bigger would he have been, you know?
Right.
If he can get a little band with, like, Asia that had a couple of hits to be the first ever broadcast satellite, you know, what could he have done with Michael Jackson? Oh, my goodness. But it's Quincy Jones. It's Michael Jackson. It's before the real craziness and ugliness kind of came into play. But yeah, number one album US for weeks and weeks. It was the number one selling album in 1983 and 1984.
Yeah, I think they said it was number one for 37 weeks, non-consecutive, but still 37 weeks. Again, that will never happen again.
No way. No, that's crazy. And number one in top 10 all around the world, tens of millions. I mean, seriously, they say over 100 million, including all the digital sales. Over 100 million worldwide. And then you throw in all the singles too. You're talking like 150 million. No wonder he could get away with doing whatever he wanted. Man. No one's going to tell you no. That cash cow needs to keep churning,
correct,
man. Yeah. But I'm sorry he died at such a relatively young age. He was 50.
I didn't realize that. I knew it, but it didn't really hit me until I was looking at this and like, yeah, he was only 50 years old, but when did he die?
2010, maybe?
Okay, so in 2010, he had been around for so long. You know, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. I just figured he was older than that, but he started when he was so young.
Yeah.
That he was only 50. That's ridiculous.
It was 2009. Yeah, it was 2009. Yeah.
And even that, I remember, was like everybody stopped. You know, it was what I can't even. I was at a bar or something or a restaurant with big TVs. And it was like, there was a, wait, what just happened? Michael Jackson died? Oh my goodness. So even then it was big news.
No, but I mean, he made his public debut in 1964. You know, he was on TV before we were born, Jackson, you know, I mean, and we're 50, you know, now. So, I mean, we're getting up there now. Yeah. We don't know a world without Michael Jackson. Whereas, you know, there'll be people now who discover his music. You're like, oh man, I wish I'd been around. You do wish you'd been around, because it was something else. It was a phenomenon unlike anything.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I wasn't there for Beatlemania. But there's four of them, and some of that's in black and white, and they can't really move, right? They kind of can jostle their guitars and shake their head. Woo! But to see this guy do his dance moves live and in these videos was unbelievable. It was life-changing. First cassette I ever bought. Now I have like 2,000 albums or something like that.
But you still have it, though.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Wouldn't give it away for the world, even though I haven't listened to it. Because it's a tape, it'd probably fall apart. But it's a treasure to me. It was the start of something, even though I'm more of a rock guy.
Right, right. It caught you in a moment where you said, I want to have this thing to be able to listen to it whenever I want and not be subject to the radio airwaves. Yeah, there is something about that where even if maybe you don't listen to it now, you still have that relationship with it. Just remembering the good times.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I think the next two were Men at Work, Business as Usual and Cargo, because they both kind of hit in America at the same time. They kind of delayed Business as Usual for a while in America. And then they both kind of hit at the same time. Duran Duran, I think, was fourth. And then the Police Synchronicity was fifth.
Okay.
And I don't really remember after that, but I remember those five were in order for a reason. And it was Duran Duran's first album. So it went Thriller, Business as Usual, Cargo, Duran Duran, Synchronicity. And well, we've covered most of those in one way or another on this show at this point, Jackson.
Well, that's why we're here, because either we talk about this with each other over the airwaves here or we drive our families crazy. So
that's right. And I'm proud to do both, but I think this is the healthier outlet for everyone.
Exactly.
And being the Thriller is kind of the scary Halloween one, I'm like, what's a good Halloween theme? This thing's about to turn 41. I'm not going to wait for it to turn 50 to do it. I'm like, you know what? Let's attack Thriller and kind of get it out of the way, because like we can't not.
You can't ignore it.
Do Thriller. Yeah. As far as if there's any kind of personal or autobiographical piece of this podcast, you can't have 150 shows and not talk about like what Thriller meant to the formation of watching MTV, buying records, listening to things we like, and being able to pick out things like, oh, that is Eddie Van Halen, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know? Well, it may not be the usual rock and roll fare we cover on this show, but we thought it was important to cover Thriller at some point because of the cultural impact and the way it impressed upon us when we were kids. I mean, it comes out when we're 9 years old, huge when we're 10, 11, 12 years old, all over MTV, and you'll never again see anything like the phenomenon of Michael Jackson, the rise of MTV, this huge juggernaut album all kind of coming together at once at the dawn of a new era, post-punk, post-disco era of the 80s. There's been nothing else like it in my lifetime. Like I said during the show, I wasn't around for Beatlemania, but what went on with Michael Jackson in the 80s there was unbelievable. The sales prove it. And if you didn't live through it, you'll probably never understand it quite the same way. You can appreciate the music, of course, but sitting up to see the Thriller video and the making of movie, seeing him on Motown 25 doing the moonwalk, these moments, seeing him accept all the Grammys with his glasses on, it was just culturally significant in a way that I don't know that we'll ever see again. A couple things to clear up real fast. Toto 4 did come out in April of 82, not March. I think the single Rosanna came out in March, but the album wasn't until 1982. And, well, Quincy Jones doesn't have a gazillion Grammys. He has 28 on 80 nominations. The most, of course, is by Beyonce, who now has 32, and just edged out by conductor George Solti, who won 31. But it's a sick number. Michael, by the way, won 13, and David Foster, who I think I said had 18 during the show, actually has 16. Wasn't way off there. But this album alone won 8, I think, in 1983 or whenever it was. Huge, huge, big part of American culture and really worldwide culture. And as it's a big Halloween-themed song thriller and that its 41st anniversary is coming around Thanksgiving, we thought it'd be a fun one to do. But speaking of mistakes, folks, hey, did we get something right? Did we get something wrong? Did we miss the point? Did we leave out your favorite part? Let us know. Email us. It's uglyamericanwerewolf@gmail.com. You can also tweet us, DM us, at @ugly_werewolf or at @actionjack72. Let us know about the albums, the artists, the tours, the songs, the books, the DVDs, the concerts, the rock and roll you want to know about. Please download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And please, folks, if you're thinking about it, do give us a positive review. It is huge for us. It just so helps us find other rock fans like you and helps us grow the show. So if you're thinking about it, please go ahead and do that. Won't take you a minute. If we get wind of it, you send it to us, might just read it on the show. We want to thank Pantheon Pods for welcoming us to the family. Check them out at Pantheon Pods. And of course, to our amazing sponsor, RareVinyl.com. Wherever in the world you are, use code UGLY on RareVinyl.com and save 10% off your orders, Michael Jackson, Jackson 5, or otherwise. That's it, folks. That was a long one. Be sure to tune in next time. And to all you rock and rollers all around the world, be cool and keep doing what you do to keep rock alive.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.